morning, everyone, and thank you very much for coming. Those of you who are present here, those of you who are hooked up via the web, and those of you who are hooked up by telephone, there are quite a few members of FAB who are participating for that. We're very, very pleased. The program is a short program this morning with Suzanne and Michael making a presentation, and then really opening it up to members of FAB to ask whatever questions they may wish to go ahead and ask regarding the presentation. We've heard a lot and we've read a lot about the Royal Victoria Hospital project, in fact, something which has been ongoing for many years. And now the university is beginning its planning in terms of what it might be able to do under the assumption that the Royal Victoria Hospital could come to the university at some point or other. Michael has made presentations to the faculty. I believe it was in this room about a month and a half ago, then I know to Senate and probably to many other organizations, but we felt it was important that members of the FAB here, given the fact that the university has recognized the space deficiency of the faculty of management as being so acute, it's something that's been recognized, and now hopefully action will be taken. So the program will have Suzanne, followed by Michael's questions, and hopefully by the end we'll have an action plan in terms of what are going to be the next steps. So Suzanne, my pleasure to pass off to you.
Merci. Thank you. Good morning. Bonjour. Let me start by thanking you all, the members of the Faculty Advisory Board, for your support and your commitment to this faculty. It's extremely
Marcel.
Bonjour. It's extremely important, and we appreciate it enormously, particularly as we are, and you know that, going through a period of transition, a period of change. We are on the verge of appointing a new dean in this faculty, so this is a major change in terms of leadership, and it is extremely important in this period of change that we continue and we build on the momentum that has been created in this school over the last several years, and in fact bring the school to its next level. I've seen what has happened in this school. I've seen it initially from outside of McGill when I was at Queen's University, and then I've seen, of course, what has happened in the last decade, and I think this progress is remarkable. This faculty has the potential to be a leading faculty worldwide, and we need to commit to that. So it's a very important thing. It is certainly at the top of my priority list is the Desautels Faculty of Management. I think it is a faculty that has enormous potential and a very important core member of McGill University. So I wanted to tell you that at the outset. So we're in the midst of a new a change in leadership. Just to tell you where we are, there was a first round of recommendations. Candidates have been retained for a second round of interview, and in fact they're happening at this moment as we speak. We have, I think, an interesting field of candidates, so we'll be looking very carefully at these candidates, and we're expecting that some recommendations will be forthcoming before the end of the month. So it's moving quite rapidly at this point. I say this is a period of transition, but also a period of building on what's been built in the past year, and I see certainly main areas where your good advice will be very important. One is, of course, the academic programming. Are there other niche areas that this school should be focusing on and building on? So that, I think, is very important for us. Are there opportunities for this faculty, both here in Montreal, but also outside of Montreal and outside of Quebec? As you know, many business school, faculty of management, pursue opportunities outside of their own borders. So is there something that we can do here that would be to the benefit, apart from the Japan program, of course? Partnerships with other institutions and with business. We have very good partnership with HEC, and probably opportunities to build on that, business partnerships with business. I think I spent quite a number of years in Ottawa and looking at what has happened in Canada. I know that this is not necessarily a strength of our Canadian faculties of management or business, was something that I think could really be an advantage for McGill. And finally, the space issue. I think the very first meeting I had after being selected as principal was with Dean Todd and the chair of UofF, the then chair of UofF. And one of the first things that they talked about was not only, of course, the very, very impressive progress that had been made in the faculty, but the space issue was one that they raised right away as a big issue and one that really limits the potential of this faculty. So I've been made aware of that from day one, and it's been on my mind from day one. And in fact, and Michael, I can attest to that, it's been something that has been made the first a priority in thinking about the campus and the space issues on campus. Now, we're also very, very mindful of the fact that this can't wait another decade. It's been maybe in waiting for a number of years, and there's some urgency to attend to this issue and this problem for the school. And particularly if this faculty wants to build on what it has accomplished so far, we really need to address this space issue. So we've been focusing on that. Now, we're going to talk this morning about the Royal Vic and the possibility that McGill will acquire the site. I want to say at the outset that we're very, very, very early in this school project. We don't have the site. The site belongs to the government of Quebec. It doesn't belong to McGill. We haven't done any yet of the in-depth assessment that needs to be made in order to see how and whether we can utilize the site. I want to make it clear that this is an option that we need to consider seriously. It is not the only option, but it is an option that we need to consider seriously. I think you know as well as I do where we are now, where we're located, limited opportunities to expand around this current site, but there are some. So we could maybe do some small reaménagement around the site here, or another option might be something that is essentially brand new at the Royal Vic site. So these are options, and I think it is important to consider all of these options very seriously and see which one would be the best for this faculty. So I'll pass it to Michael, who will tell you a little bit about the site and some of the thinking and vision that we have right now for the site.
Good morning. I want to speak to you a little bit today about the site. As the principal says, because it's in our backyard and because the faculty or the campus is essentially landlocked on three sides, to the north, to the east, to the west, we figure we have to look at this in the interest of future generations of McGillians. And I think the principal has also said on another occasion, if this is about a kilometer away, we wouldn't even be looking at this. Because it's a site that comes with a lot of challenges, but it is an iconic site and one that I think also can provide a lot of opportunities. It was about a year ago that Les Amis de la Montagne, the Friends of the Mountains, held a conference on the future of some of the hospital properties on the mountain, specifically Royal Victoria and Hotel Dieu. And at that point, McGill made it be known that we were interested in the site. So before anyone ran off and targeted it for condo development or something else, we wanted it to be known that McGill was interested, as I say, because of the proximity to the campus. The interesting thing about this, and for this to be successful, this cannot be just the McGill project. This has to be really an urban development project with partnerships with all levels of government, the City of Montreal, the Province of Quebec, and the federal government. It is a project which, for it to be successful, must first and foremost meet the academic and research priorities of the university. Otherwise, it's a non-starter. The university has a recognized space need of some 700,000 square feet. That 700,000 square feet, the government of Quebec recognizes that it owes us based on the student population, research activity, etc. So it has to meet that. Again, we want to create something which becomes an architectural signature, something that will be recognized with the university. Part of what we're doing and part of why we think it's an urban project is because it'll reopen access to Mount Royal and give the mountain back to the citizens of Montreal the way it hasn't had it for a long time. And if we think of Central Park in New York and maybe some other kinds of green spaces in the major metropolis, the kind of easy access to such an important site. What we envision also is an opportunity to increase touristic activity, recreational, sports, cultural, environmental activities as well. A site that maintains its institutional purpose and character, but becomes more open to the populace and is pretty much accessible 24/7, 7 days a week. It is a large site. We say 110,000, that's roughly 1.2 million square feet of building, 9.5 hectares of land. What we are looking at in order to respond to our immediate space needs is using about two-thirds of the site, and we'll show you on the map what buildings specifically. The other third, we're looking at basically partnerships, longer-term partnerships, institutions or entities that would use the site until a future date when McGill would need the space and it would revert back to Montreal, back to McGill. We believe of all the options that have been discussed, and quite frankly, we don't hear many others right now. We don't hear anyone beating down the doors other than some developers that we know are interested. We think McGill is an ideal solution for this site because it allows us to maintain the institutional nature of the site. We address issues in terms of greening and openness to the mountain. It addresses our own space needs, and McGill has a proven track record, I think, of dealing with heritage and patrimonial issues. And there are a lot of lobby groups out there that I think would and have been very supportive of McGill's use of the space. We have in the past year met with over 40 groups from different levels of government, pressure groups, interested stakeholders and all, and everyone is very interested in McGill taking this over. The big question, of course, the $64 million question or whatever it is, you know, how do you pay for this thing? And we'll talk about that a little bit.
$640 million, Michael.
That's right, yeah.
I was trying to remember the game show, which was the $64,000.
Yeah, but this one is the $644 million.
You're giving away my punchline. Oh. That's okay. It is, as I said, a project that we believe we need to look into. We need to kick the tires on the site and see if it's at all feasible for us. It is, though, a process that we go into with our eyes wide open. There are conditions that must be met in order for the university to accept going forward on this. One of them, the principal mentioned, this cannot be another RedPath house. This cannot be one that's going to take 28 years from the time when a decision is made until actual progress takes place on the site. It has to, we are saying, be given to McGill at a cost of no more than $1 because our whole financial modeling calls for McGill's contribution to be put to the renovation in part of the facility. So any acquisition would necessarily come reduce the amount available for us to actually invest in the space. The MUHC and the government of Quebec carry on its books about $120 million. As the cost of what it hopes to recover for this. The number, I will spare you my opinion as to where that number came from. It is not based in any fact. It is, we have market appraisals that show essentially the economic value of that site to be zero. But we can discuss that. We have done architectural heritage studies that show that there are parts of the site that are not as architecturally interesting and that could be demolished. And the groups that we have spoken to so far are supportive of that plan, and that would allow us to be able to build proper facilities with the right dimensions, heights, column spans, etc. Because, as I say, there are some challenges of trying to fit modern university-type functions in the current configurations. The financial package that we're talking about would be a one-third, one-third, one-third split between the university, the government of Quebec, and the government of Canada. The government of Canada has an infrastructure program called Building Canada, which makes funds available for projects such as this. It would be up to the government of Quebec and the city of Montreal, however, to indicate that this is a priority for them, and the federal government would include the funding. McGill's funding would come from roughly $225 million, would come from a special campaign tied to McGill's bicentennial anniversary in 2021 for the restoration of heritage buildings for this project. Also, some $70 to $80 million from disposal of non-strategic assets, so buildings on the periphery of the campus, that would also allow us to reduce the deferred maintenance bill, some $50 to $60 million worth of deferred maintenance in those buildings. And as we say, it has to move forward in a timely manner, and you'll see the schedule. We're looking to have part of this completed by 2019, and we'll talk about the dates also later. It has to meet our academic and research needs. It cannot affect our ability to sustain and grow the academic and research mission. It has to be financially viable, cannot affect McGill's reputation, and not all of our space needs will be met on this site, and so therefore we have to be able to have the financial wherewithal to be able to address the other space needs on the rest of the campus and on the McDonald campus as well. This is a picture of the Royal Victoria site in 1914, which we'll come back to a little bit down the road. To date, we've taken a bit of a risk for a project or for a property that we don't own. We have spent more than $1 million on these studies. We are at a point now where we are waiting for the government to indicate their approval to go on to the next level of detailed planning studies, a total of about $8 million for which the government would kick in $4 million and the university would kick in $4 million, and we're discussing the terms under which we would do that. There's some indication that there was an envelope set aside in last week's budget, but we don't have confirmation of that. So in the next few weeks, if that comes forward, then we will be going public to announce these studies, and it will take some 12 to 15 months for us to complete those, the next level of studies. This just to show where it's situated next to the campus. As I said, we conducted a heritage studies for each of the buildings on the site. So did the city of Montreal, and the results were identical. The buildings that you see in red have very high, determined to be a very high patrimonial value. Those in yellow are, I guess, back here, and these less so, and they could be demolished if we wanted to. When I talked about McGill's needs being limited to roughly two-thirds of the site, it would be this portion of the site here. The Allen continues for at least another 10, 15 years in its current location, but the Ross and the Women's Pavilion could be available for third-party partnerships to be ceded through emphytetic lease or some other arrangement to be occupied by an institute whose or institution or entity whose aims, objectives are similar and compatible with that of the universities. Could be a long-term lease, as I said, 50, 60, 70 years, at which point then the space could revert back to the university at a longer date. So this becomes a way of also having some built-in expansion in it. The other option was just to try to acquire this and leave the government to do what they want for those, maybe turn it into a long-term housing facility or long-term care facility, which there's been some talk to, or sell it and turn it into residences. At that point, the university would never be able, never say never, but it would be very difficult for the university to try to recover those buildings, those properties at a later date. That's why we're going for a strategy which says 100% ownership up front, occupancy over time.
Michael, the neuro is completely distinct.
The neuro is a separate issue, and we can talk about that. The plans call for the neuro to move to the Glen eventually, but there are no plans that have been worked on. I believe a site has been identified, but if the decision were made today to move the neuro and some $600 million were found by the government, it could still be some 7 to 10 years before the neuro actually moves. That obviously will have an impact on us because the building itself belongs to us. And so that becomes an option for us to do some things with down the road. These were just some slides to show some phasing of how it would happen. Essentially, we would work on the front pieces here first, then demolish the buildings and rebuild back here, and then this last phase. What it allows us to do also is to convert parking lots back into green space, to give green space back to the mountain. So you had here and here. There was also a pool up there somewhere, and these things get turned back into green space to allow greater access to the mountain for our community and the Montreal community at large. The net effect of this is to reduce the paved footprint by 49%, and also in terms of building. The spaces that are there are very inefficient, very narrow corridors, the gross to net ratio is very high. So by being able to demolish and rebuild new space, we'll actually be able to build more efficient space. So we will have the same or more space on a smaller footprint. And I'll show you in a minute the impact of that because it is quite dramatic. We will be able to reduce total built space by some 23%. And we'll be able to give back to the mountain the equivalent of 4 football fields in green space. This is what it looks like now. You'll remember the image from, I think it was 1914, and with the parking in the front. And you'll see this building here, the way it's built now, sort of obstructing the crown of the mountain. With what we're projecting to be able to build, restoring green space back in the front, demolishing and rebuilding, we can actually knock 4 floors off that building to improve the sight lines to the mountain. Again, lowering what we actually build there. One of the questions we have to address over the next 15 months during the planning studies is how much space do we actually build? So do we knock it down 4 floors? Do we knock it down 3 floors? But just to show you what the impact of that would have.
Some parking's going under it.
There will be some parking underground here, but we're removing most of it. Now, that's one of the issues that's coming up in terms of parking, where we located. Obviously, creating parking spaces in the mountain can be very expensive. But the whole issue of transportation and access to the site will have to be the object of separate studies, not just to the site, but within the site itself, because there are a lot of steps you'll see. These are just some perspectives, some renderings on what it could look like. This is university looking up. There is an issue with respect to this archway connecting the neuro on the east and the Royal Victoria on the west. If it's not necessary and if it's not classified and this could be demolished, I would personally argue for demolishing this. I recall on the Maisonneuve, those of you who remember the Drummond Court building that came over the Maisonneuve at Stanley, I think it was, or Drummond, the psychological impact it had when that thing came down, the way it opened up the Maisonneuve and sort of reconnected east and west. And I think that would improve, again, access to the site improve just the circulation there. The idea is to turn university into a bit of a pedestrian access. You'd obviously have to maintain access for emergency vehicles, but turning it into a pedestrian mall all the way up. This would be a view from University North looking south. That's a power plant that we could knock down. and then rebuild there. I'll show you a video in a second of what this can all look like. One of the features that we would like to incorporate into a project up on the Royal Victoria, and certainly became more of an issue after the experience last week at Convocation, is a convocation or conference hall that can sit some 2,000 people. So this would go in the space where I identified where some buildings can be demolished in the back. So it would be, again, artist rendering. This was not designed by Roger Taillebert, so there's no retractable roof, and should withstand Montreal winters and winds below, above 3 kilometers an hour. When it's not used as a convocation or auditorium, you can have it as an exhibition space, a meeting space, public space for people to use the rest of the year. This is at the top of university going up onto some of our residences. The idea here again to create more access from the building up onto the top. The staircase here would connect up to the roads at the back, the Ross and Women's Pavilions there on pavilions on the left. Again, at the end of the day, what this will allow us to do is to improve or increase the teaching spaces at McGill by some 47%, allow us to increase our offices by 32 space and other kinds of space, library, study, common spaces, et cetera, by some 21%. We have some visuals of what some of the spaces would look for. One of the things we would be building are more flexible space, more state-of-the-art type classrooms with technology built in. These are samples from other universities of some of the spaces that have recently been built. So just to give people a feel for some of the kinds of spaces that we can look for there. This would be library spaces. Obviously trying to take advantage of the site so that, you know, and the sun, so you'd have lots of natural glass, very high ceilings. The timeline right now, we've been working with the government. We have submitted what they call a dossier de présentation stratégique. We are waiting to hear from them to go to the next phase, which are the detailed drawings, detailed studies rather. That's $8 million, which is at this stage in a project that we evaluate at close to $700 million, reasonable. We are looking to submit the final dossier d'affaires initial in 2015. The idea is for us to hopefully be able to put a shovel in the ground sometime in 2017, which would be Montreal's 375th anniversary, 150th of Confederation, with an opening of a first phase projected for late in 2019, second phase 2021-22, and the balance in 2023. As part of our presentations, we've created some materials. This PowerPoint, which we've shown, as I said, to a number of groups. We've also created a little video it's about 2 minutes, that basically takes this material and summarizes it, puts it to a little bit of music, but just maybe gives you an impression of our vision for the site. So if we can...
The future of the Royal Victoria, a vision for Montreal. Montreal, a vibrant metropolis whose creativity and savoir fuel Quebec. At the heart of Montreal lies its mountain, its namesake, an urban jewel and a symbol of its past and its aspirations. At the base of the mountain rests the Royal Victoria Hospital, a landmark steeped in history and full of potential. Its grounds and public purpose are symbolic and important to Montreal and will continue to be in the future. Nearby rests McGill, one of the world's best universities, looking to grow in order to serve its mission and its community. McGill has a vision for the Royal Victoria site, a vision that connects it to the mountain, to the city, and to the world. A vision of accessibility and greenness with more public spaces and more pedestrian paths. A vision that preserves and protects important architectural heritage. A vision that opens access to Mount Royal from downtown, welcoming Montrealers and visitors alike. A vision of progress and connectivity, one that bridges the city's past to its future. A vision that brings people together in a contemporary, harmonious urban setting. A vision that preserves the value of the past and the unique character of this stunning site. A vision that ensures McGill can fulfill its mission in the decades to come while bolstering Montreal's international reputation. Proposes a vision to fulfill our collective aspirations.
And it can be yours for $700 million. That's it as far as the presentation. Would you please answer any questions you may have?
You seem to be suggesting that the Faculty of Management might be the only faculty for McGill that would move to this site. I didn't hear anything about the possibility of other faculties.
So let me talk about the academic vision a little bit. When we've been thinking about this project, one of the goals would be to use it as a site that would exemplify the international character of McGill University. So a global gateway, if you want. So to bring to the site all sorts of activities, academic activities, research activities that are, by their nature, situated in the global environment. We have many, many institutes in these universities, and universities that have that kind of a mandate and mission. So to bring them over to that site. Now, we will need to have some anchor faculties, so it cannot be just an assembly of small centers and research units, but also some anchor faculties, bringing also activities such as our language schools, making it a hub of international activities. So that's the vision for the site. Now, a secondary thought, and I think I should mention it, is Michael said we want this project to be not only about McGill, and it can't be just about McGill. It has to be a project that is McGill with the Montreal community. So it is important for us to have functions there that are by their nature more open to the general public. It's difficult, as you know, to put on a site like this scientific laboratories because they cannot be just wide open to the public. We have substances, equipment, animals, and so on that for the safety of both the users of the building and the public, general public, you cannot just open that up and say, come anytime, walk through the building anytime. So it would be better to have the kind of either academic programs or activities that are not of that nature. So these are the thoughts. There's no question that we need some anchor faculties. Now, this hotel might be one. There might be other possibilities, though, for the site. And faculties that see themselves in that global environment as well. So that's... Now, of course, knowing that we have a very significant space issue with this hotel, that is our biggest need. Of course, then this faculty comes to mind, but it isn't the only option.
I forgot to mention at the beginning that Don Lucas, who is supposed to be here, and Don has already met with Suzanne on this issue, is unfortunately or fortunately in California, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning for him right now. So have there been any? Don, you're on the phone. Are there questions that you might want to start with?
Thank you.
Don, are there any questions that you would like to commence with?
Yes, please. First of all, Suzanne and Michael, thank you very much for coming in to present to the faculty. And my question is, there's a wonderful vision for RBH, but in the meantime, what can be done for the Des Hôtels faculty? Because our space needs are immediate and they are significant. And also, the second question is, while the RBH opportunity is being analyzed, is there the bandwidth to analyze other possibilities for Des Hôtels at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to?
Well, certainly we continue, with respect to your second question, we continue to look at other options for Des Hôtels. We are, at the same time that we're looking at Des Hôtels and looking at RBH, we're also looking at an overall campus plan. That's one of the principal's priorities that she's announced over the recent months. So I think it's going to be a question of us knowing a little bit long-term where we're going and then fitting everything else in. As I said, RBH, we will have to know by this fall the program for what units faculties are going in, because we need to be able to give instructions to our planners and professionals. It just can't be open and, you know, overly flexible in case one day we decide it'll be X or Y. So we'll have to know that for this fall. At the same time, we're looking at other options. As I say, Four Days Hotel, there are the ones that you've heard about in the past. There are others that we've come up with recently. So this planning work is all continuing at the same time. So with respect to your first question of what to do in the short term, I guess we'll need a little bit of time to just identify where we're going longer term, and then we can make up, then we'll have the short term vision to get there. We know that there is a possibility of perhaps a donation in the faculty, and that may require some space. Again, depending on where we're going long term, we have different options for how to accommodate those needs in the short term.
But let me add here, there certainly are two paths that I would say could be envisioned at this point. One is expansion of this hotel around this site, with the limitations that you all know, so I don't have to explain that. And that would be the permanent location of this hotel for the long term. The other path is expansion around this site for the short term until a new facility is built or is renovated on the RBH site, with the thought that this site here, as it is expanded, can serve another faculty when it moves to the mountain. So these are two possibilities, two paths, which are open. We will have, obviously, to make a decision. We cannot keep the two options open forever, but there are two options, I think, that we certainly can envision for this hotel. And the question will be to think about which one, in the end, is the best. I mean, I've heard many, many arguments about keeping it here because it's on Sherbrooke Street. Now, it is in the center hub of financial activities of Montreal, but it is a nice site. The other option is to make it at the centerpiece of that international campus that we're envisioning for the RVH and bringing around it all other activities that can connect with this hotel, whether, you know, businesses and management connects with everything, whether we're talking about its impact in commerce, of course, but also in health, in legal elements, everything connects, entrepreneurship and so on, so everything can connect. So then this hotel becomes the core of that campus and a place that attracts people from everywhere in the world and conversely connects Montreal and Quebec to the rest of the world. So it has a core function there that talks to, I think, an even larger vision on building on what has been here. But, you know, the two options are open at this point. I think the question is which one will be the best. And, you know, you can have arguments in favor or against both options at this point, but eventually we will have to land on one of them, because my own sense is this, is that there is an urgency to attend to the space issue of this faculty. This is the time to really commit to some solutions. We are in a period of transition, and I think it's a time where we need to make a commitment, and so we need to give ourselves a bit of time consulting with people who have at heart the best for this faculty. But eventually we need to land on one or the other option.
Can I also just add also that in terms of the options and how they play out, one of my last projects at Concordia University, where I was before, was the construction of the John Wilson School of Business, which is state-of-the-art, 350,000 square feet building, which we built for about $130 million. The issue for me is if you can expand on this site, and with the limitations, and I know there are some ideal scenarios that really have some strong practical problems associated with it, which will leave you with a 1960s building, which will be renovated, expanded, and if that is deemed acceptable, that's an option. It is maybe on a per square foot basis an extremely expensive option. The other one gives us the ability to build something brand new to our specifications, but it has some other disadvantages that I'm sure you're familiar with. So I think this is also going to be part of the, what is good enough, what is acceptable, and what does the faculty really need.
There's one thing I will add in there. I've returned to campus, as you know, in September. And one of the things that I've observed here at McGill that is of very, very great value to this university is the fact that it has a campus. Most universities don't have a campus in the way McGill has a campus, with some parkland, in fact, as part of the campus. I've visited just about every university in Canada in the last 7 years, and very few have that kind of space where people can walk across the campus. And on a nice day, I think you've observed it, there's people everywhere. With our campus being totally Wi-Fi now, you know, the young people would rather sit outdoor and do their work than be in a classroom. That has enormous value. I think we would lose a lot by expanding our campus, some parking lot somewhere, not really part of the campus. So I think that option is not one, there was an option of that sort that was contemplated in the future, in the past. I don't think that is really adding to the value of McGill. I think keeping a campus is something that has served us very, very well, and I think we'll continue to do so. It's a rare thing nowadays.
I mean, it's for me, it would be pretty hard to argue against the viability of the Royal Vic project if it can be pulled off. I think there are very few people who would say it isn't a wonderful aspiration for the long term. It's a little hard to imagine that there'll actually be a phase one
completed by 2019. So I think in realistically looking at an interim plan, we've got to assume that it might be a plan that's going to have to last longer than 5 years. So in that regard, I mean, to me, the biggest issue would be, what is the interim plan for the university? And I know there's been talk about expanding into the bookstore, and that's fine, but in my view, that wouldn't be nearly sufficient to take us through until the time that the Royal Vic project may be ready. So I think, you know, any viable project that can give us the proper facilities to work out until such time as the Vic is ready, in my view, has to include the hotel next door to be possible. And so my question is, if that's agreed to, if that's the only way to make this viable for the next 10 years or so, is that a project that can be pulled off at the same time as the Vic project is being developed?
So I'll start and then Michael will add. The Royal Vic, if the site is given to McGill for us to use, will have to come with a very large investment from the government. We're talking of at least $200 million. Given, as you all know, the financial situation of Quebec, it's unlikely that they'll keep on adding more and more investments for space in universities. They already have invested heavily into Gare du Tremont and so on. There's still Hôtel Dieu that they're going to have to worry about. So any additional projects we might have to do on our own without having a contribution of government. So that is the restricting factor. So we're in a situation, I'll be very honest with you here, maybe we shouldn't be repeating too broadly, but the Royal Vic is a problem for the government. There's no question about it. This site left empty will very rapidly become a site that creates a security problem for Montreal, for the mountain, a mountain that is very much loved by people here. It's a problem for them. And so they're looking at McGill, I think, in a favorable way because we can be part of the solution. At the same time, though, I'm expecting that the negotiations will not be necessarily all that easy because we cannot capriciously walk away from being a partner in that project. So I'm expecting that they will not say, well, you know, you don't want it, fine, we'll put our $200 million somewhere else for McGill. So we will have to enter in this in a very responsible way and with an understanding that we cannot just capriciously say, no, we're not interested. We can walk away from the project, and as I made that clear, this is not going to be a nouveau voyageur, that's the term I've used. It's not going to be a failure, and so we need to have the winning conditions assembled for us to be able to take advantage of the site, and we need to have the money invested. But if we have partners, if we have the government of Quebec willing to invest around $200 million, plus putting that project in the top priority for the Bell Canada, so that adds to another $200 million, so we're at $400 million, we cannot just capriciously say, well, we don't want your money, and please give it somewhere else. So that is the kind of restrictions that I'm seeing for ourselves. You talk about the hotel, and Michael will expand on that, but as you know, they're not prepared to sell it to us at market value. So that's...
it's still a pretty low price in comparison to what we're talking about.
It's not, I mean, I think the estimate is about $100 million for that. So buying the property, taking it down and rebuilding, it's not that low. Not that low, so that's our estimate, because it isn't a cheap property to buy, but then we would buy it to take it down and rebuild, so that is not exactly cheap. But I'll let Michael go into details.
The last discussions that we had with the owner, when we had a market appraisal that puts it at about $19 to $21 million, was to sell to us at $44 million.
and he wasn't even interested at 44. I think there are some personal family reasons why he wasn't interested in selling, but he threw out a number of $44 million. As the principal says, we have to knock that down. That would turn it into the most expensive land deal in Montreal. The most expensive deal so far, I think, was the land outside, not too far from the Bell Centre, at just under $500 a square foot. This deal would be at $4,000 a square foot if we paid their price, knocked it down for a piece of land, essentially. The other important consideration is, even if we were to do this alone and said to the government, we will not ask you for one dime, they must still approve the deal. Any real estate transaction more than $1 million, the government of Quebec has to approve. And as the principal says, if they have their mindset on us taking RDH off their hands, and if they're playing fair and they're giving us all the money and all the encouragement to do that, for us to say, no, we don't want to go there, we want to go there, they could still block the deal. So it's an important consideration. We'll see what happens at that point. And the other thing, if we're knocking down the building, we'd only be able to go to about six stories, I think. It's expansion, as the principal says, preliminary estimate, acquiring, knocking down, rebuilding, integrating, puts it at about $100 million.
David?
Yeah, look, by the way, my own view is the Royal Bank is not worth zero, it's negative somewhere.
Yeah, we agree on that.
If they're going to contribute $200 million, in fact, it should be more than that, because they should be paying you to take this in, because of all that goes with it. But you've got what I think is an extremely ambitious timeline in your core presentation here. And that's good, I guess. But as are others, I'm a little bit skeptical about it. And given the multitude of stakeholders out there who are going to want to take a kick in this can, not just the government, not just McGill, but everybody in their brother and sister and grandmother is going to have an opinion and wanting to be part of a forum on what we're doing and interfering in what the university is trying to accomplish there, in addition to all the other risk factors. So the company, a major project like that. So, in your planning, Michael, it strikes me as though you're proposing the absolute best case scenario in terms of timeline. And I don't know whether that's the realistic time frame. So maybe you could just bookend that for us, how you're thinking about the schedule, because time is money.
Yeah.
And every month that this ends up taking longer, it's going to cost X percent more. That's just the law of nature.
You're right in the sense that we've mapped it out in terms of if the government, from when the government gives us the okay to proceed to the next stage of planning, which we're hoping will be over the summer, we're putting in our schedule September, October, because we have to decide what the functional program is, what units for faculties are going in there. Then you're talking 12 to 15 months, maybe even 18 months there. And then we're saying, 2017. So we're mapping that out. You're right, there's going to be an issue with the stakeholders, the lobby groups. There'll be public consultations. That's why we began a year ago. Yeah. We've had at least, I would say, four meetings with les amis de la montagne. I'm meeting them tomorrow morning at a breakfast that they're having. Heritage Montreal, a number of other groups, the City of Montreal, different ministries we start. That's not to say that they're not going to come up, but that's why we've been very clear in saying the timeline has to meet our own objectives. If it starts to look like it's going to slip like that, then I'd be the first one to recommend to the principal that we pull the plug and we go to Plan B. This cannot be, as I said, a red hat house. This cannot be 28 years of inactivity. We have many needs. There is just this option right at our doorstep that we feel we need to look at, but with some very tight conditions, one of which is time. So I agree with you. It is maybe overly ambitious. I also like to think that symbolism are things that politicians like. So 2017, 2021, there are some milestones tied to those things. If it starts to look like it's going to slip that, I think then we pull out Plan B, C, and D if we need to.
Yeah. Just talking about politicians, some of you maybe were at the dinner last night for the opening of La Conférence de Montréal. Several politicians were there, including the Minister of Finance of Canada, Minister of Finance of Quebec, the Mayor of Montreal, Larry Summers did the after-dinner speech, and interesting to hear, well, of course, I had McGill in mind, but interesting to hear him say that this is the time, talking about time, not to waste time, this is the time to invest in infrastructure projects because of the cost of borrowing and all of that, and that this is the time to do that, and that this is actually giving to future generations, not mortgaging future generations. We need to do that now, and we need to invest in that. So ministers were taking notes and so on, but both at the provincial and the federal level, they know that they have to invest some of their monies in infrastructure right now. So,
Suzanne and Michael, just one comment for me. I mean, listening to, I think that we're all having enough experience with this, that the time likely will slip. So put that to one side.
Yeah.
Us as a fab have long seen over the years how this faculty has really percolated its way up to something very substantial and continues to grow off of that. Suzanne, you mentioned that at your opening remarks. How do we deal with, how do we continue to build this with the constraints we have, and what do we do to go forward over something that could take anywhere from 5 to 10 years?
Well, again, the one issue that I am aware of where there could be an immediate need for space, we have an option of looking at rentals in some premium office buildings downtown contiguous to the campus, where we've already leased some space for other faculties. I think if you start to look at even the bookstore or putting a floor and a half on this building, you're still looking at 3 to 5 years. You'd have to get a derogation for this building. You'd have to do the planning and fundraising and the other. So there's still a window there. I think the short, the more immediate way to deal with space needs is through rental of space. And then the rest, I think you can look at, as the principal says, either expansion here, and then even if the decision is made to move this faculty elsewhere, then the building can be used for some other purposes down the road. But it's still, you're looking at, a 3 to 5 year window.
Ron, I believe you have a question.
A question from Lily de Grandpre. You partially answered the question, I believe, but if I understand what she's asking is, what are the other options for the RBH project? What are the other faculties that are being considered?
Yes, so mainly non-lab-based disciplines. So there's a, and we need a substantial core faculty, such as faculty of law, faculty of management would be possibility.
Medicine? No.
No. Well, the problem with medicine, is that you're looking at lab disciplines, yes.
There's the soft side of medicine.
Some of that, for example, population health is an area that would move nicely into a site that's focusing on global type of thinking, initiatives, activities that would be there. So there are part of what we're doing on the medical side that could be there and would be there, but not the biochemistry type of disciplines where you have animal labs and so on. It diminished the accessibility of the site to the general public, which is a concern, particularly as we want this to be more than just about McGill, and it has to be more than just about McGill because of the nature of the site. It's an opportunity for McGill, I think, to be more anchored into the community with all of the challenges that the site has to present itself. It's an opportunity for us to be more anchored into this community.
I'm told that Suzanne has to leave because she has Michael, if it's okay with you to remain on.
Well,
let
me see if there's one or
one last question.
Yeah.
Given your funding relationship with the government and where you're at today, When you bake this whole project and you look at the next 10 years and you look at the numbers and the way you would post it, how does it in fact look to the government?
So how does it look to the government?
Yeah, from their perspective,
right.
Is there can you bake it in a way that it helps solve more than the third of the problems that we're just doing?
So, as I said, we have a space shortage that is recognized by the government of Quebec. Applying their own formulas, it's something like 600, close to 700,000 square feet of space they owe us. Applying their own formulas, they would owe us some $225 million. So the contribution that we're asking for this project, is what would be needed, what they would owe us if we had projects for the sum of the space that we're entitled to. We're not asking them to give it to us in one fell swoop. We're asking for it over time. We think it's much more manageable. They gave to Université de Montréal on the same basis $173 million for the Gawi-Tormont project. So we're looking at different ways. So I think from the Government of Canada, the money is there if Quebec and Montreal deem this to be a priority. Quebec owes it to us and they can pay it to us over time. We have a plan for our own campaign and the disposal of assets. And then to take advantage of what the principal just mentioned in terms of borrowing costs, we could borrow, and so we're looking at the possibility of floating a bond or something too. So it's not out of the realm of the possible in terms of the financial. Yeah. And the government hasn't balked when we've discussed this with them. They know the order of magnitude.
The one thing I would say, though, is that although in some way they owe it to us, they recognize that we have a space deficiency. That doesn't mean that they have a big check somewhere that will give to us whenever we feel it's time to ask for it, and particularly given the finance of Quebec. In my previous discussion with the previous government and with new members, certainly what is clear is that this has to be a project that will be exciting, not just for McGill, for a lot of other people. They have to be able to say, yes, we're investing in this, and this is an exciting project for Montreal and for Quebec. That's why, you know, they're looking at something that will contribute to Montreal and Quebec, not just contribute to McGill. And if I think of anything that McGill contribute, you know, apart from a great university, one of the best universities in the world in Quebec. Now, we always have the but it is a good form that some people don't like. But anyway, the part about McGill, I think, being an Anglophone university, the asset for Quebec right now is the fact that McGill is a passerelle, it's a global gateway. And we must build on that. It's a global gateway. Quebec and Montreal, Francophone, Anglophone, Allophones, all can take advantage of that presence of McGill globally. And I think it is an opportunity to use that site as a global gateway. We can bring students here from everywhere in the world like no other university, in fact, in Canada can, and create on our campus a microcosm of the global environment that people need to be able to work and live in. We see that at McGill, we can build on that. Now, not of an insignificant point is that, you know, the tuition policy of Quebec. You know as well as I do that when it comes to Quebec residents, it's unlikely that any discussion on the fee level will be undertaken for the next decade, about. I have not been pessimistic, I'm being realistic. I think the so-called printemps arabe was enormously painful. Nobody wants to get back into that. And so we also need to be looking at attracting students from outside of Quebec and gaining some flexibility from our government in terms of fee policy in our ability to do that. You've done the fight of the private MBA. It was astonishing to me coming from Queens where there was no fight with the government when Queens did it 20 years ago, and here it was a huge fight, public fight. So we need to have the government encourage us to, we need to encourage the government to give us a bit more flexibility. One of the So the arguments that I have for investing in this faculty, and maybe you're best located than me to see if this is a valid argument, but it is amazing to me that we as a country, as a province, as a city, you name it, we constantly rank ourselves low in terms of innovation. We say that we're not where we need to be. And at the same time, we are turning away hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young people who want to study in programs in commerce and business. It's true at McGill, it was true when I was at Queens, it's true at the Rodman. We're turning them away because the funding formula don't work for us. Now, we have the government, in terms of its grants, support business programs at a much too low level to allow us to hire the kind of great professors we need in our faculties of management or business. And so every student you take is into your deficit. So the government is very conscious of all of these other elements in the environment here. I think it's a shame, frankly, that we're turning away good people, extremely talented young people, who want to be in business, commerce, entrepreneurship, and across the country, we're turning them away. I think we need to also, more higher level, societal level, think about this. And so that's why I see this faculty as one my top priority, because I'm thinking bigger than McGill. I'm thinking of the problem I've heard about day in, day out in Ottawa, and that is innovation, productivity, all of this. And our biggest problem is the lack of good people. We don't have enough. So,
Michael, it's Don again. If I understood you correctly, you were indicating that there's a decision time frame of 7 to 8 months where you're indicating which faculties will go into the proposal for the RVH space. What has to happen to make that decision as to what goes, who goes there? And secondly, if there is the decision that the Dave Hotel faculty is part of the group that is put in the submission, does that mean that there's no other opportunities until that submission is decided upon by the government? When I say no other opportunities, no other opportunities for the Hazeltop faculty to look at until that decision is made on the RVA space.
So I am doing a similar presentation to another faculty advisory board later this week. The faculty that the principal mentioned as a possible occupant for the space. There is a retreat among the senior executive later this month. There will be discussions with the dean. There's a retreat with the deans as well. So I think there will be continued consultations over the summer and into the fall before there is a decision with respect to what the recommendation will be for the Royal Victoria. That being said, I don't ever want to say there are no other options. I don't want to say things are fixed. I think we can, because at the end of the day, we may find that we will walk away, or we will want to walk away from the project for a whole host of reasons. In terms of the process, I think it's ongoing consultations among the principal, the provost, the deans, and other VPs, and groups such as yourself. And then we'll move forward, but obviously we'll have to adapt if there are changing circumstances within that 12 to 15 month period that I identified.
But Michael, if the Dazzletail faculty is on the list for RVH, does that mean that it shuts down any other options in the intervening time once that is going forward? So we could be in a period of 3 or so years where we don't know if the project is going forward, and we may be at a standstill.
No, as I said, the period for us to be able to do the planning studies is some 12 to 15 months. We're looking to submit something in 2015, by the fall of 2015. We might come to the conclusion during those studies that Dazzletail, if that was the recommendation, to look at it, might the recommendation or the decision that it won't fit, or there are too many obstacles there. But if not, and we submit it, we expect a turnaround time from the government fairly shortly thereafter. This becomes a problem for them, by the way, as well. As of next summer, they begin to incur a tab of as much as $10 million a year to keep that site secure, heated, ventilated while it's empty. They're estimating it less than that, but it's still, I would say, a good $8 to $10 million. So this is a priority for them as well. But I don't want to say absolutely no other decisions, discussion during that period, but there are going to be some go, no-go decision points along the way.
Michael, because after spending a year at this and having spent $8 million on feasibility studies, are there a couple of specific risk factors that could well lead to another decision, like what are the top of consciousness that could lead to that?
Well, if the lobby groups are able to put pressure so that we cannot demolish the space that we say we need to demolish, if the government of Quebec or the government of Canada, it'll be the government of Quebec decide that this is not a priority for inclusion in the Build Canada, and therefore there's no matching federal participation. If we believe, after Mark Weinstein does a feasibility study on his own campaign, that we don't think we can do it, so I think a lot of it will turn around our ability to build the spaces that we need there. So having the flexibility with respect to demolition and zoning, with respect to the finances from the different partners, and as I said, the timeline. I admit that it's fairly aggressive to say we want to be in there phase one by 2019-20, but there's got to be a point where we're going to say no because it's too late. Bearing in mind that any other option we look at today is going to be a good 3 to 5 years anyway, so that's what we've got to trade off.
So it's a slam dunk.
Put it down as a maybe.
Michael, so what would you say to the following? So I'm in the government of Quebec. I'm one of the senior civil servants and advisor to the Minister of Finance and Minister of Education. And look, guys, Royal Vic's a liability. Okay? It's a big liability, and we've got to get rid of this quickly. McGill's the obvious taker, and by the way, we have enormous leverage over McGill. They depend on us for money. They depend on us for multiple levels of consent. We are going to force them to take it, and we're going to force them to take it on our terms, not their terms. So to speak.
So I will respond by saying that about maybe it's 2 years ago now, I don't remember the Minister of Education, might have been Madame Beauchamp, or may have gone back to, might have been Madame Jean Talget when she was at Treasury Board, said to the then principal, Heatherman-Ville Bloom, yes, we want you to take the Royal Vic. As far as we're concerned, you can have it, but you have to operate it within existing resources. And we said, no, thank you. So one of the conditions for us is not just on the capital side, but on the operating as well. There have to be matching operating monies. They can say you have to, and we can say no. We know that Hotel Dieu is being targeted for University of Montreal. University of Montreal has no interest in it, and they will put up conditions for the government to try to meet. We don't have to take it. It does make it a problem for us to try to pursue other alternatives, but we don't have to put an albatross around our necks, particularly if it's going to turn into, as the principal says, another Île aux Voyageurs. That's why, if it gets to that point, I suggest we'll probably be at an impasse because we will not take it under those circumstances.
I'm more concerned with our situation. This is an advisory board, so I guess at the end of the day, even if we can develop a coherent point of view that we all sign off on, we're not a decision-making body in this sense. I assume our views are of some importance, but I'm more concerned about what happens in the interim if we do sign on to this project and if the project does go ahead. You seem to be saying that our best solution until such time as we're ready to occupy the Vic is to lease office space in order to meet our growth needs for a period of, let's say, 10 years. I mean, that's what we're really talking about. I mean, is that even conceivable that an advisory board like this could agree to sort of
mortgage away the next 10 years in return for this dream project at the Royal Vic? I just don't see how everybody here could sign on to something like that. I mean, we have significant requirements. These go back 15 years now since we've been talking about them at our advisory board. I mean, how can we possibly agree to something like this if our interim solution is so flimsy?
Well, I think there's been quite a bit of work that's been done in this building over the years to upgrade the quality of the space. And again, I recognize, at best, this is a 1960s building that will be renovated. So even if you look to acquire the building next door, demolish it, build it back half of its current size, and spend some money here, you will have a 1960s building modified, renovated, and some expansion. It's not going to be larger than what this building is now. So in my mind, building something brand new, state-of-the-art to your own specifications, to the size, is the ideal solution. Yes, time is an important consideration. When it comes to universities, and this is a good example, we take a 70, 80, 100-year outlook on that. So I can appreciate that there are immediate needs. As I said, there is a request on the table now for maybe the creation of a new entity that's part of this. The short-term solution, yes, would be to lease some space. And I dare say that the spaces would be, in terms of office and conference and some of the classroom-type space, very acceptable type spaces. We're in a situation now where we have to look at this other option, and I think between now and October, I think things will become a little bit clearer as to what direction we're going in. Obviously, I think the principal has heard and has heard the feedback that we've received. No one is going to be, I think, drag kicking and screaming into something they don't want, but we have an opportunity to use this iconic site next to us, and the government has said to us, we will contribute if you can create a vision for us that allows us to dream. Something that is for the benefit of Montrealers and Quebecers, not just the Montreal and the McGill community. So that's why we've taken this particular approach. If we had turned this into wet laboratories and other kinds of spaces as had been originally intended, I don't know that the government would contribute as much as it may potentially with this other kind. And the other part that I want to just emphasize is that last third, the Ross and the Women's Pavilion, there are some exciting things that we're talking about possible entities that might want to go there. United Nations level type agencies, multinational corporations, businesses that I think the faculty would dream to be associated with. So I think there's a vision there that can be created that I think might be enough to bridge this discomfort that I sense with respect to time. But these are things that, unfortunately, may take a little bit of time. Sorry.
When you mentioned precinct, you suggested that there's actually a classroom, all the spaces available.
Well, depending on the size of classrooms, I mean, you're not going to get a 200-seat auditorium in an office building, which has a floor-to-floor, slab-to-slab ceiling height with certain column widths and all, but there could be other spaces, you know, smaller-type seminar, conference rooms, certainly office meeting spaces, things like that. We've just moved the Faculty of Dentistry into 2001 McGill College. The schools of communication science and disorder in the Faculty of Medicine are moving there as well. So there are spaces that are suitable for certain types of academic purposes, but not all.
Michael, you mentioned that there's going to be a reduction of some of the redundant assets maybe at the university. Is there a way to take down one of those buildings and put up a new faculty amendment?
The ones that we've identified wouldn't give us a footprint large enough, and also some of them are on Peel Street, and we wouldn't be able to build in height what we need. At best, you'd be able to replicate the volume of space that you would be taking down. And some of them you probably couldn't take down anyway. So they could be sold to be reconverted back into residences or into professional offices. Lawyers and accountants.
you just thought, I'm just not that familiar with the Concordia John Colson School, but that the image of it is that's quite a hell of a school. And the real estate unit up very well. Can you just give a little bit of background on why you chose that place?
That site? Well, so the faculty was lodged in the Guy Metro building in the corner, southeast corner of the Maisonneuve and Guy, maybe since the 70s and all. And the faculty had been talking about expansion for some time. And we had different plans, including the expansion of that onto the Maisonneuve. And we looked at different scenarios. And again, they were just incremental increases at a very expensive cost. And then there was a condo project that had started at the Maisonneuve and Guy that went bankrupt. And the university acquired the land for about $2 million in the late 80s, or mid-90s, rather. And
so that was the key point?
That was the key point. It was 30,000 square feet of land. And we were building new facilities for the Faculty of Science, Engineering, Visual Arts. So the Dean of Commerce, as it was at the time, said, I want a building too. And the university made the decision to float a bond because it was getting no government funding. And so we floated $200 million in, I guess it was 2003, 2004. And actually an interesting part of this is that when the Richard Renaud Science Complex was opened in 2003, I think it was, Jean Charest, who was the newly elected premier at the time, came and spoke of the wonderful partnership between government and the universities and the contribution that the government of Quebec made to the project. He was reminded afterwards that the government of Quebec gave exactly zero to that project. Thus began a whole process of lobbying the government, and the government contributed $60 million to that project on top of the Molson family, $20 million to that project, and then we funded the difference through the proceeds of the bond. So it got built relatively quickly. After, it was like one of those overnight successes that took 20 years to be realized.
I don't care about the attendance of this faculty. So you said that, you know, eventually people know if we're going ahead on that, we know of it. And then you talked about the hotel, which doesn't seem to be a possibility. The library, which people have, you know, three hours in some term, maybe in the short term, in the long term. And then bookstore. The bookstore.
That's the reason.
That is the big
one. Yeah, and then we heard Madame Pottier say that you know, one of the possibilities we're looking at is go outside of the campus, which does not feel that we contribute to the building. What's our plan B if it's not next door, if it's not a wall of it, and can we work concurrently on our plan B? So whenever we make that decision about the wall of it, we're ready to move into plan B.
So we do have architects who are looking at plan B, which is the expansion of or adding space to this building. So it would be roughly the equivalent of about a floor and a half, if I remember, because you cannot go all the way. You would have to apply for, as I say, a derogation to be able to fill the floor, because that Metcalf that runs up, and you would be blocking the view of the mountain at that point. Plus the expansion into the bookstore, which would get you about 30,000 square feet there, plus the top on this building, and you'd have to have a connection underground if you wanted the two buildings to communicate, because you could not block off the lane, because that's a city lane and you have to maintain access for emergency vehicles. So that in itself, you know, without the hotel could become an expansion of that down the road. So we are looking at what that would entail. And a preliminary number, I always hesitate to throw out numbers, but when we looked at the bookstore and some of the other things, we were talking about $30 million just that piece there.
So that's not an ideal situation, if you just described it. So would it be possible to put that on the table, the building on Phillips Square, if it's, you know, to choose the best of two evils? Are we better off with, you know, this, what we're trying to do here, or go outside?
So as one of the people that put forth that idea originally, I would be in a very uncomfortable position right now. but I think it is something, if not that particular site, then other sites. And I am aware of a site that may have become available recently, so we're also going to look at that. But right now, I think the principal has mentioned what her views are on construction off campus, and I respect that. So I think if we're at a point where we're trying to identify other options, I think it's only fair that we look at all options. Put them on the table.
I have a comment from Lily de Rompray. I think it's more directed at FAB members. She says, I think that the responsibility of FAB is to look at the situation with our own perspective in mind, but also thinking more broadly about long-term solutions and putting our own faculty in the overall McGill context. Just a comment.
Other comments or questions?
Well, you know, I would just add, I mean, you probably get a tone of some skepticism and concern, and you're probably not surprised by that, but I guess I'm sure there are others that share this. I think it's a very exciting project, and I can easily imagine the faculty being very proud to be in it, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, and I guess the concerns you're hearing are, you know, in the meantime, and you know, pragmatically, do we need to look at other options and so on. And that's a pent-up frustration, of course, that, as you well understand, has gone on for some time. So there is that. And I suppose there are some that might be attached to being on Sherbrooke. And I used to work across the street, so I always thought this was a fantastic place because I actually teach in the faculty, so it's an easy place to get into. But I now teach in the Executive MBA, Ashersay McGill, so initially I thought, gee, what a, you know, hell of a long way to go to Ashersay, but I must say I've adjusted, so I think while Sherbrooke is a hell of a nice place to be, I can also see, you know, the faculty adjusting to being up the hill as well.
As I said, transportation and access is an important consideration. People talk about the mountain, you know, accessing it, and then once you're in the site, how do you move around in the site, within the site, because there's lots of steps in what we are proposing, so people come back to us and said, can you look at some other kind of like moving sidewalks, elevators, that kind of thing. But I think the idea is we're trying to create here really a destination spot where people will want to go, and it's the access isn't going to be the issue, it's what you're going to find there that's going to want to make people want to go. And I think that's what we're trying to create, regardless of what who ends up being there in the end. That's the total vision we're trying to create.
What did you want to ask myself?
Is Marcel still on the line? Marcel, are you still on the phone?
He may not be.
Because Marcel has had several positions. And I know Michael has to go as well. And it's not the heat, Michael, it's the understand. But if we don't get... Is it coming on board? If not, Michael, I want to thank you. I already thanked Suzanne for coming here today to explain. As Suzanne said, there are several paths, and I think everybody here is anxiously awaiting sort of the October date that you said, by which some decision will be made in terms of a future direction, which I think is, as you've heard from members of the FAB, the time is clicking. It's been clicking probably for the last, I think since 98, when the first study was done, and it's been clicking, and really it would impact on the faculty in a very negative fashion if there was no direction that was set forth very quickly.
Don, should this advisory board attempt to put forward a position or a reaction to the meeting of today and to give our views in a coherent way?
I think we should. That's a good suggestion. And what I will do is, with Morty, organize a call or a meeting where we can put our thoughts together and prepare a response to Michael and Suzanne on our views from today.
Any other questions that are going to come up? If not, thank you all very, very much. Michael, again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don, thank you very much. Well,
yeah, you were on the
right.